Over 400 of Russia's Olympic athletes are now in danger of being banned from the Rio Summer Olympics. With just 17 days until the games open, the International Olympic Committee, the IOC, is now reviewing its legal options after a stunning report revealed the biggest doping scandal in sports history. And the options could center on banning all Russian teams from Rio because it was state-sanctioned. One American anti-doping official says, and this is a quote, "It's a mind-blowing level of corruption." It is proof that attitudes towards performing-enhancing drugs have certainly shifted since Greg Stascoll worked for the FBI here in Southeast Michigan. As it turns out, a certain legendary Michigan football coach was ahead of his time when he raised questions that inspired the first FBI probe into steroids and doping. Retired FBI agent Greg Stascoll, welcome back.
Happy to be here, Cindy.
Take us back to 1988. Your phone rings, and on the other end is Bo Schembechler, and he wants a meeting. Why?
Well, I didn't know when I received the phone call. Bo just said, "Hey, can you come over? I want to talk to you." And you generally, if you're invited to see Bo, you
go.
You go. Yeah, he's that kind of guy. But it or was that kind of guy. And so I went to his office, and Mike Gittleson, his strength and conditioning coach, was there as well. And we sat down and basically, as Bo was, he got right to the point and said, "You know, we think these steroids, anabolic steroids, are getting to be a real problem in sports." And as it turned out, Bo had testified in front of Congress regarding making steroids a scheduled drug and the distribution of steroids, making that a felony. So he said to me, "What is being done to enforce that?"
So he was seeing it coming in and seeing it in kids, young kids too, right?
That's correct. That's basically what he said. He told me a couple stories mm-hmm. about some teams, some college teams that he knew were abusing anabolic steroids, using them, and they knew it gave a competitive advantage. And Mike Gittleson, being a strength and conditioning coach, was pretty well versed on steroids, how they work, and their effects. And he also said, "You know, we have these summer camps where we're bringing in high school kids, these instructional camps." And he said, "The concern is these kids are coming in and they're not asking us about steroids, whether they should do them, not do them. They're basically saying, when should we start doing steroids?" And it's as though it were an accepted thing, which was a little bit of a shock to me. I had played football, and I was not aware how big the problem was until I got involved in the case.
So here recently, it had become illegal to sell or possess non-prescription steroids, these
Correct.
Anabolic steroids. So Bo wants to know what's being done. You started poking around. What'd you find?
Well, I made some inquiries, and I found out that nothing was being done. It wasn't being done by the FBI, and it wasn't being done by the Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA. So I got to thinking that maybe we could put together sort of a small-scale undercover operation. I thought of it in terms of a sort of a regional kind of thing. And I talked to our people in our drug unit back in Washington, and they just weren't particularly interested.
Why?
Well, at that time,
it impressed Congress enough to pass a law.
Well, keep in mind, the FBI has only had drug jurisdiction since 1982. And we were brought into it to help DEA and primarily to work cases at an organized crime level.
So in their view, we've got big fish to fry with organized crime, so whether some high school kid takes
that and the fact that, you know, they're looking at cocaine and heroin as being the big problems and to a lesser extent marijuana because of the bulk and the amount of money involved. So they weren't particularly interested in hearing about performance-enhancing drugs. And like me, they weren't – they didn't quite have any kind of idea what the problem was. And until we got involved, we didn't realize how big the problem was either.
You wanted to go kind of a low-level investigation just to get things started?
So ultimately – I argued that it was a fraud against the government, and that is that because these are prescription drugs as well as an abused scheduled drug, I argued that they were circumventing the prescription route, which in effect they were, and therefore it was a fraud against the government. So we opened it through that unit, which was a little bit more amenable to doing it, And that's how we started the case.
And it was called equine because?
Because a big source of the steroids, and really the steroids of choice of a lot of these people, bodybuilders and weightlifters, were veterinary steroids, steroids that were intended for horses. And consequently, we codenamed our operation, our undercover operation, Equine.
Equine. And so that's from the late 80s until the undercover portion ended in around the mid-90s?
Correct.
What kind of haul did you get in terms, because it got bigger and bigger, and so what did it ultimately net in terms of convictions, and also how many dosage units of steroids were confiscated?
Well, it was estimated, and the Food and Drug Administration worked with us. They did not have a criminal investigative unit at the time, but we worked with them sort of on an advisory capacity, plus the fact that they had a substantial amount of intelligence regarding steroids. But they estimated that we took off the street 10 million dosage units of steroids, a significant amount. We certainly made a dent in the market. And we ended up successfully prosecuting over 70 dealers. That was in Canadian court, U.S. court, and to some extent, at a lesser level, state court, but over 70 dealers. We didn't even attempt to prosecute users. If you don't possess a significant amount of steroids, it works out to basically being a misdemeanor, and we were going after the dealers.
And one of the dealers that you would have liked to prosecute, but it was a swing and a miss, was a guy in Northern California named Curtis Wensloff?
Yeah, it wasn't really a swing and a miss. I mean, basically, we made inroads. Our undercover agent was introduced to him by a cooperating subject, a guy that was a lower-level dealer, mm-hmm. who this guy was one of his suppliers. And Curtis Wensloff was originally from Michigan, but was living out in Oakland, California. And our undercover agent went to California and met up with Curtis Wensloff. He gained Curtis's trust and ultimately make some buys from him. And then we confronted Curtis, and Curtis agreed to cooperate. Now, when we went to propose prosecution of
right.
Curtis—
in Northern California.
In the Northern District of California, they said, no, we're not interested in pursuing steroids. So we were back to that thing again.
But
so,
it did give that link to Major League Baseball.
He did. But in addition to that, we did ultimately prosecute Curtis, but we did it using the alternate venue, which was Michigan, because our undercover agent was here and some of the steroids were sent through the mail to our dealer here.
Ooh. So,
and Curtis did agree to cooperate. Ultimately, I built up a little bit of rapport with Curtis, and he actually agreed to testify in front of Congress later regarding steroids. But at the time, one of his connections was Jose Canseco, who played when he had the connection with the Oakland A's, and one of Jose Canseco's fellow baseball players, which was McGuire.
Mark McGuire, and the Bash Brothers.
Exactly, the Bash Brothers from Oakland. And so Curtis told us that information.
And now it's almost quaint to think that your inquiries were greeted with kind of a shrug when you think of what we've seen today, and some of the very, very big names, Sammy Sosa and Barry Bonds and Alex Rodriguez. So certainly times have changed, but it certainly seems that Bo was ahead of his time.
Well, very much so, and as was Mike Gittleson, the strength coach. Yeah. And we did go to, I met with Kevin Hallinan, who was the head of security for Major League Baseball in 1994. And that was at the tail end of the undercover part of our operation. And I met with Kevin at Quantico. We were all down there for a presentation thing. I make presentations to sports teams, and Kevin was there. And we spoke about steroids. In fact, I had written an article for the FBI magazine about law enforcement and steroids. So we had a discussion, and I told Kevin about our concerns, and specifically about Jose Canseco. In their defense, they were in the throes of labor problems. The strike. Took place that year. And they said, you know, the players right now, they don't want to be tested. Now, there are other things that we probably could have done, but at any rate, baseball apparently did not want to opened that can of worms at that time anyway.
We certainly know they have since, and then certainly it must have made you kind of, I don't know if smile is the right word, but feel pretty vindicated when you saw what happened.
Well, I felt vindicated, but I also felt that, you know, it's just too bad that we couldn't have done more then.
Yeah.
You know, we actually got more publicity and media attention when it came to be known, and I think it was 2005, that we had in fact warned Major League Baseball and they had in effect ignored our warning. So it's too bad that we couldn't have had more of an impact at that time than we did. But as you can see, it's still a continuing problem.
Retired FBI agent Greg Stayskull, thank you for taking us back to a very interesting phone call from Bo and a very important, what turned out to be a very important investigation.
Well, thank you for having me, Cindy.